Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at wdiy.org or at yourfinancialchoices. Our topic this evening is takeaways from prior shows. We'll take your questions. Eric's in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. And email is also available through yourfinancialchoices.com. If you prefer not to speak live, just give your question to Eric and he'll write it down and bring it in to me. So again, some topic takeaways from prior shows. So what I did here is I just actually went back to the beginning of this year. I could go back almost 13 years, folks, but I decided, why don't I just start with 2022? And I went back and I looked at some of the topics and just kind of grabbed what I thought was, you know, one of the larger takeaways from each of the shows that I picked. And I don't know if I'll be able to touch on all of these, but let me just give you kind of a little summary of those topics, which was from January 5th shows, planning ideas for the year ahead. So we're at June 15th, and I thought it would be a good idea maybe just to kind of, you know, revisit that. And then January 19th of 2022, I had Ryan Mulhern, who is a SEMA, has the SEMA designation, and we talked about a little bit of behavioral finance theory, and I thought we could touch on that a bit because we need to kind of understand behavioral finance in light of what we're experiencing in the markets a bit. February 2nd, we did a punch list of planning tips. March 22nd, we talked about ways to talk to your children about finances at any age. March 16th, tax planning with retirement accounts, where Jackie Cornelius and Rod Young hosted for me that week and talked about some tax planning topics related to retirement accounts. So I'll give you some tips from that show. March 30th, we talked about charitable giving. May 4th, we talked about estate planning implementation. May 11th, legal and financial planning for Alzheimer's disease with attorney Dennis Pappas. Medicare planning on May 25th with Daniel Banks. June 1st, I talked about savings bonds, including I-bonds. And last week, we had attorney Jim Ruggiero talk about Trust 101. So for listeners who don't listen regularly, this also demonstrates the breadth of the topics that are covered on the show. I'm always looking for ideas. If you have a topic that you would like me to cover, you'd like more information, you can send those ideas through yourfinancialchoices.com. I'm always entertaining ideas for show topics. Some of the other shows we did during that period of time in the beginning of the year, of course, always include tax topics like tax planning, estimates, you know, new tax legislation. I talk about taxes a lot, so I'm not necessarily going to highlight any of that this evening. We also do a quarterly market review, and I'm not going to cover that this evening either. These are just some of the topics that kind of stood out to me that I enjoy talking about and thought I would grab some of the big takeaways. So let's start first from the beginning with the planning ideas for the year ahead. And again, I just pulled little snippets from those shows to kind of highlight here tonight. So planning opportunities for the year ahead. What I had reviewed there was to do a financial wellness check, which could include reviewing if you're on track to meet your goals, review if your strategies to meet those goals are working, and plan within the elements of your financial planning. Review how you monitor your portfolio, especially if you do it across accounts or custodians, and reviewing your beneficiaries. So let me talk a little bit about that. So I had said review your plan or plan within the elements of your financial planning. And as a certified financial planner professional, this designation is through the Certified Financial Planner Board. There is a website, cfp.net, that has information available to consumers. But one of the things that they encourage is the financial planning within this kind of a framework, which I like to just call the elements of financial planning. And that's where we pay attention to the cash flow, investments, risk management, tax planning, retirement planning, and estate planning. I always have at the top of my mind when I'm working with clients those six elements, because I like to make sure that people realize that if you're making a decision in one area of those financial planning elements, it almost always has an impact on one of the other areas. If you're making decisions in your cash flow, it could affect your investments. It could affect your retirement planning. It could affect your estate planning. If you're making a decision in your retirement planning, like retiring earlier or putting more or less money into a 401k, obviously that affects your cash flow. That affects your investments when, as part of your retirement planning, you're putting money into either an employer plan or an individual retirement account or a Roth IRA. We think that's retirement planning. That's also investments, meaning you can't just say, hey, I'm going to save for retirement, and you put it in the bank account in cash. Well, then your money's not working for you while you're working. You want to make sure your investments are working for you to help provide for that long-term retirement plan when you're no longer bringing in the salary, okay, or the payroll. So the elements of financial planning, very, very important, and making sure that those elements are working together. Now, we also talked about, in that show, this wellness check, which I thought was interesting. I don't know if people review their own financial situation as often as they should. You know, we get our cars checked because we're required to. We go get our what is that called when we get our state inspection, James? And so we have to get that done, and we're required to. But no one says, hey, review your financial wellness regularly. So we want to make sure that you're doing that. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about that and how I, during that episode on January 5th, planning ideas for the year ahead, we also talked about using SMART goals. And many of you are familiar with SMART goals. If you're working in a corporate environment, quite often they will talk about them. They're very applicable in so many parts or areas of our life. So I'll touch on that, and then we'll talk about some of the other topics and some takeaways from those. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Psst! Did you know WDIY public affairs programs and features are available on all major podcast platforms? Listen anytime, on the go at Apple, Google, Spotify, or NPR One Podcast and Apps. Just search for WDIY 88.1 FM and you'll find a variety of award-winning public affairs programming from the Lehigh Valley. Listen and share with your friends and family where you get your podcasts and introduce them to Many Choices, Real Voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And we are talking about takeaways from prior shows this evening. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can ask questions off topic or on topic, off air or on air. If it's off air, just give your question to Eric and he will write it down and bring it in to me. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Topics or questions could also be shared through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. So the show I'm referencing prior to the break and to wrap up right now is the show from January 5th, Planning Ideas for the Year Ahead. These shows are available on WDIY.org, also at NPR.org. I'm not sure if you can search for them, but they're available there as well. So when we talked about planning ideas for the year ahead within the context of the financial planning elements, also applying SMART goals. So the financial wellness check is basically to check, are you meeting your goals? Do you have goals? What are they? They can be a particular saving objective or a retirement goal. So the wellness check is, you know, have we defined our goals? Have we developed strategies to meet those goals? What's the timeline? Where are we on that timeline? And how to kind of framework that out was, if you've heard of, as I said, SMART goals. So S is specific, who, what, where, when, why, which. M is measurable, from and to. Can you track the progress and measure the outcome? A, attainable. How do you do it? Is the goal reasonable enough to be accomplished? And how do you do it? R, relevant. Is it worthwhile? Is the goal worthwhile? So maybe you want to have a $5 million house and you make $40,000 a year. Is it relevant? Is it worthwhile? Do you want to kill yourself for that kind of a goal? Maybe not. You know, it's very nice to chill, you know, in something more modest. No problem. T, timely. When your objective should include a time limit. I will complete this step by month, day, or year. So the goals within the financial planning elements, and then making them SMART goals, being specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. I just thought that was a good way to kind of think that through. Now, let's talk about behavioral finance just for a bit. That was January 19th. Again, I had my guest was Ryan Mulhern, who's a CIMA, which is, I think a chartered investment management analyst. And we talked a bit about behavioral finance. And that is, behavioral finance theory involves existing beliefs, biases, and what assumptions we hold, such as rules of thumb. So just to give some examples of that, existing beliefs, it's called cognitive dissonance. It's selective perception and selective decision making. If you're aware of it, can you help resist it? I guess is where I'm kind of going with this. So we have to kind of question our own existing beliefs and understand where they're coming from and how is it impacting us in making objective decisions, which could in the end, you know, benefit us. Another existing belief was one called conservatism, which is ignoring new information and clinging to old beliefs. You know, when we reflect, does that happen? Are we prone to that? And for some of us, it could apply. Confirmation, where we have selective perception on what confirms our beliefs and devalues contradicting ideas. Now, many of us might do this in financial decisions. We may do it in social decisions or political decisions or, you know, work environments, whatever it might be. And it never hurts for us to kind of reflect and see if this applies. And if my husband's listening, we were talking about exercising before the show, and he was telling me how, I'm tired. He said, you need to exercise. You need to get out there and move. And I'm like, I don't want to get out there. I don't want to move. I don't think that helps. Well, you know, am I clinging to an existing belief that I think I'm going to be tired if I exercise? Maybe I need to rethink that. So, you know, we have to challenge ourselves. And I think especially when we're in the kind of financial environment we are right now, where we have inflation, we have a lot of volatility in the market, economic turmoil a bit, wars in other countries, it's you know, time maybe that we have to sit back, reflect, and think about what are our positions, where do they come from, what's driving those decisions or those beliefs. Okay, so behavioral finance. There's also something called cognitive biases, and that relates to information processing. So that's a little bit different than some of those perceptions and beliefs that we have. So information processing, meaning mental accounting, how do we compartmentalize things, framing, decision makers respond differently on how it's framed. So if I frame something to you, like, oh, the markets are crashing. That's a cognitive bias you may have based on how you're processing the information. Are you responding because of the negative message? And other people may respond if something is framed in a positive way to lure you or, you know, to secure, you know, to assure you. So a positive message doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean it's good. Same thing with the negative. So you have to just be careful and kind of understand and step back and kind of really be objective in how information is being delivered to you. There are many other cognitive biases, and I'm just trying to highlight some of the takeaways from these shows that if you're interested in learning more, you can go back and listen to those shows again through the websites that I've described earlier. Also, rules of thumb. You always hear about people talking about rules of thumb, but that really relates to emotions. So there's loss aversion. The possibility of loss is twice as powerful a motivator as the possibility of making a gain. So you may, you know, be subjected to someone who may try to influence how you might react to something by emphasizing a loss that you may occur, you know, that you may experience to drive a certain action. So we have to be kind of a careful of these. I kind of I'll use the analogy of scam callers. When someone calls, you kind of have an idea of what they're trying to do because we've heard it over and over, and they can get quite clever, and they can use new modes of scare tactics. And that could be something that you have to be careful of in, you know, loss aversion. They could use that. People could use that against you. So just be aware, behavioral finance, what is driving our behaviors? And in that show, it was particularly to how we approach, you know, financial decision making. But really, behaviors can impact us in many other areas as well. So we are talking tonight about some takeaways from prior shows, and we've talked about planning ideas for the year ahead. That was from the January 5th episode. We've talked about some behavioral finance theory. That was from the January 19th episode. And when we come back from our next break, we're going to talk about a punch list of planning tips. And again, just highlighting, that is from the February 2nd show, and then talking to your children about finances at any age, and that is from the March 22nd show. If you have show ideas, I certainly welcome those, and you can send those through yourfinancialchoices.com. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Eric. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about topic takeaways from prior shows. And I am looking right now at the punch list of planning tips from February 2nd. And that really piggybacked well off of the January 5th show where we talked about planning ideas for the year ahead. January 5th, we kind of talked about setting goals and how you were going to attain those goals and meet those goals and making them smart goals in reaching them. And did also talk about the elements of financial planning in reaching those goals. And on February 2nd, we had the punch list of planning tips. And what I did talk about there as well were some tips about the cash flow and how that can help you. So again, emphasizing the importance of coordinating the elements of your financial life, as I mentioned, cash flow, taxes, investments, risk management, retirement planning, and estates, making sure that you understand that a decision in one area of your life impacts another. I've often used the image of a pool table when you do the first break and those balls go all over the table. That's kind of understanding how an decision in one part of your financial life can impact on many other areas as well. So let's start with that cash flow as an example. And again, I'm just hitting some quick highlights from these different topics. Did you know that having an emergency reserve helps manage not just the unknown expenses that creep up on you, but it also helps manage your reaction to the market's impact on your investments? One of the questions that we ask our clients when we talk with them regularly is, how's your cash? How much cash do you have in the bank? And I like to remind them, I'm not asking to see how much money I can grab and invest for them at all. The point of asking about the cash and the cash needs is to make sure that they have that little bucket of money that they can navigate or tolerate what is going on around them in the markets, and they're not having to pull out of their investments at an inopportune time. That's why it's important to make sure that you have an emergency reserve. And you know, we often talk about the short-term bucket. So we'll say to folks, what expenditures do you expect in the next 2 to 5 years? Do we have a new house planned or a wedding or a new car, renovation, remodeling? So we like to understand what the cash expectations might be. It doesn't mean you have to have that amount of money all in cash. Definitely the reserves we like to see in cash, because that's really that short-term need you may have to grab. But even for the longer term, you might not want to put too much in the equities where there's more volatility if you know you're going to be pulling out in the next 2 to 5 years for things like big purchases. I'm talking about like a wedding or a new car or a renovation. So the emergency reserve, having that security of that and that short-term bucket, really, I think, helps allay the nervousness that one might experience in watching the volatility in the market, particularly the volatility that we've experienced, you know, in recent months. So what other tips did we have on that particular episode punch list of planning tips? One of them was set it and forget it. Whether it's auto saving from your paycheck, contributing to a retirement account, or a Roth IRA, setting up automatic savings from your paycheck instills a savings discipline before it hits your bank account. If you don't see it, you don't spend it. And I think it's really, really one of the keys to successful saving is that set it and forget it. And you might think, well, why do we have to keep talking about this? This is, you know, general information. Everybody knows this. A lot of people do know it, but you know what? There's a lot of people who don't. So we want to continue to remind folks that this is something that works. It shows that it works. And the only caution I might have when we talk about this set it and forget it, the only thing I don't like to see is if someone is saying, well, I'm going to save, and I'm putting 10% into my retirement account, or, you know, even more, some people, I'm really maxing out my 401k. That's great. I love it. It's set it and forget it. You don't see it. But back to the understanding all the elements of financial planning, don't do it to the detriment of other smart decisions. Meaning, I've seen people maximize their contributions to their retirement accounts, and they also max out their credit cards. So that is not something I would suggest or recommend, meaning you have to kind of be smart. We go back to those goals. We pay attention. Just because someone says set it and forget it, don't set it and forget it to the point that you're putting all this money into a retirement account, yet running up credit cards debt because you don't have enough cash flow coming through from your paycheck. So you got to kind of step back a little bit. What's, you know, probably a good idea is when you're young, you start with something. Sometimes you might start with 3% or 4%. You particularly want to at least make contributions to the extent your budget allows to get any kind of employer match from, you know, when an employer matches what you put in. That's free money. So that is a good decision. As long as you're also not running up big credit card debt. So pay attention to that. And in fact, if you are someone right now who kind of it got out of your sight, your range, and you forgot that you had done the set it and forget it, and you're contributing a lot to your 401k, but in the meantime, you know, years have passed, and all of a sudden you have three kids, and, you know, you've gone to part-time, and you didn't realize that, you know, times are tough, and you started putting money on credit cards, and you kind of forgot you were putting all that money into the retirement account. Now would be a good time to revisit that, and that's where you do that financial wellness checkup. And I've often talked frequently about doing an inventory of your financial life. That inventory you can do on an Excel spreadsheet, you could do it on a piece of notebook paper, you can do it in a budget program where you take stock of your assets and your liabilities and how much they're costing you. And then also, and when I talk about liabilities, I'm talking about the interest rate, whether it's on your mortgage or the interest rate on your credit cards, interest rate on your student loans. So you understand how much is that costing you. And then on the asset side, how much are you, you know, earning, saving, that type of thing? Have you built up some extra cash flow beyond your normal emergency reserve that you could throw a little bit of chunk of change against some of that debt? Because that just goes nowhere. All right. So those are kind of some of the ideas that we like to talk about. And that was on the punch list of planning tips. As far as talking to your children about finances, we talked about financial education starting early when raising children, that it's financial education for yourself as well as your kids, because a lot of times you have you're learning that as you go as well. Young adults, all of a sudden you're having kids, you're buying a house, and boy, oh boy, you really have to engage in your own financial decisions in a way that you might not have had to. My children often tell me, gosh, adulting is hard. So I'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back from this halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good afternoon. Actually, good evening. WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. It is 6:30. We have 85 degrees, partly sunny skies here in the valley. Tonight's weather partly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms, low 65. Thursday, chance of thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, high 84, and that'll continue Thursday night, low 69. WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, your trusted local NPR member station for over 25 years, with many choices and real voices like Lori Siebert with Your Financial Choices.
Thank you, James. Welcome back. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Eric. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We are talking about takeaways from prior shows, topic takeaways, and talking about talking to your children about finances at any age. That was March 22nd. I do encourage that. I do have clients who don't want their children to know. They don't want them to know the assets that they have. I can understand that. It doesn't mean you shouldn't talk to them about your financial situation. You can let your kids know you're secure, they don't have anything to worry about, or you can let your kids know, you know, mom and dad are going to have a tough time. You know, we don't know what we're going to do if we need extra care, whatever it might be. Have those kinds of conversations, because sometimes children, if they have done fine for themselves, they may be able to help you out, and I'm sure they would rather know than not know. And of course, there are children who may be really struggling and afraid to tell you. And if you knew that they were struggling, you might have been able to want to help them out, but they're not going to let you know, because if you're very private, they could be very private as well. So that's kind of in talking to adult children. But as far as young children, on the show, we did talk about some information from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They have a website that has a lot of information to teach kind of financial education to children. They do talk about the executive function, and which is just basically how the brain works and processes information. And they say it's the first building block, and they go into financial habits and norms, knowledge and decision-making skills, and the research behind it. Executive function skills help people stay focused and manage the flow of information. Day to day, these skills allow a person to pay attention, plan ahead, remember details, and juggle multiple tasks. They also help control their behavior and emotions, delay immediate rewards for future benefits. If you have heard about the marshmallow story, or the I would prefer like an Oreo, but where if you wait, you'll get two instead of the one I give you right now. So that's the delay of immediate rewards for future benefits, and continue forward when faced with challenges. So teaching young children how to have self-control and think before they act lays the groundwork for good financial skills in the future. People need the skills associated with executive function to do things like set financial goals, decide when to buy and when to save, and make and follow a budget, all of which contribute to adult financial well-being. So, there are government websites that have some of these tools available to help us, maybe formulate some of that financial education we could provide to our children, give us little tips. And during that show, I gave several examples of, talking to your children and little stories that you can use. On the show for tax planning with retirement accounts. That was with Jackie Cornelius, who's a certified financial professional, and Rod Young, who is a CPA and certified financial professional, who host periodically for me when I'm not available. That was on March 16th. They talked about tax planning with retirement accounts, and I just took away some of their little highlights, which were if you are in a lower tax bracket, 0%, 10%, 12%, consider maxing out your Roth accounts. And it's especially true if there's a good chance that you'll be in a higher tax bracket during retirement. And yes, that does sometimes happen. So when I first started, like 30 some years ago, the mantra always was defer, 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 meaning defer paying taxes. And how do we defer, defer, defer? Is by putting money into retirement accounts where the IRS gives us a break. We don't have to pay tax on that today. We'll pay tax on it when it comes out in retirement. The idea was when we're working, we're in a higher tax bracket typically. And then when we retire, we're in a lower tax bracket. So we kind of defer paying the tax to the future when we're in a lower tax bracket. But that doesn't always work that way, depending on how well someone has saved. And to the extent that when you retire, sometimes I have clients whose dividends and interest and capital gains on their investments, along with their Social Security that they might have delayed to age 70 and perhaps having a pension, sometimes they actually end up in a higher tax bracket than they were in when they retired. Because if someone's working for, you know, 45, 50 years, and they're deferring for that entire time, and they're saving buckets of money, then there is a chance that they've saved so much and then have, you know, required minimum distributions now starting a little later at age 72, and maybe deferring the collection of their Social Security or deferring the collection of a pension, they get higher benefits on all of those. They can sometimes end up in a higher bracket. So the concept here is if you're in a lower bracket now, consider maxing out the Roth IRA, because the Roth IRA does not give you a deduction today. And it's called using after-tax dollars. And the idea is you don't get the deduction today because in that scenario, you really don't need it because you're in such a low bracket. And then you have the opportunity to invest in an account that grows income tax-free, that then when you retire and take out a qualified distribution, the earnings are also tax-free. You can pass it on to your beneficiaries income tax-free. So the concept in that scenario is consider maxing out a Roth IRA today for the future tax-free benefits. If you're in a middle tax bracket, what Jackie and Rod talked about, and a middle tax bracket, 22% or the 24% tax bracket, they talked about considering splitting your retirement savings between tax-deferred and Roth accounts. So here they said, you know, executing some in the tax deferred and some in the Roth allows you to have flexibility with not knowing exactly what tax bracket you might be in retirement, or potentially not knowing where tax rates will be in retirement. So kind of a little bit of a hedge. And if you're in a higher tax bracket, we're talking 32%, 35%, or 37%, there's a possibility that your tax rate in retirement will be the same as or lower than it is today. So maximizing your tax deferred accounts and possibly execute backdoor Roth IRAs. So again, maximizing the tax deferred accounts in the period of time where you're in a high tax bracket, and then doing the backdoor Roth IRAs. The backdoor Roth IRAs are where you can make a non-deductible IRA contribution, which then has basis in it, and you can convert it to the Roth. And if the only thing in that IRA is after-tax dollars, then you could actually convert it to the Roth at no tax cost. Now, granted, if you have other IRAs already, the backdoor Roth doesn't really work as well, because then you have to pay tax pro rata on the conversion. So the backdoor Roth IRA really works for people who don't otherwise have IRA monies. Now, the backdoor Roth IRA concept or strategy is on the table in proposed legislation. They really would like to do away with the backdoor Roth, which again is using after-tax dollars, non-deductible IRA contributions. They want to make that go away. And piggybacked on that is rolling over after-tax contributions in 401ks to a Roth. So for some people who've been at companies for a very long time, some of our big corporations locally in the Lehigh Valley, you might have been there for 35, 40 years and would have had the opportunity to make after-tax contributions to your retirement accounts. So if you review those retirement accounts, look at your statements, you're looking for things, descriptions that say after-tax contributions. Years and years ago, when people would roll over those 401ks to IRAs when they retired, the after-tax dollars would just come out and you'd get a check. You'd just take the cash. Well, then they invented Roth IRAs, and then someone had the brilliant thought of, hey, can I roll these after-tax dollars into a Roth IRA? And, you know, legislation said, yeah, sure, you can do that. So then all of a sudden, the after-tax dollars weren't going out to you as a check, they were going into Roth IRAs, which could then grow tax-free. Well, they want to do away with that as well. So we're not sure where this is going. Nothing has passed yet, but we might lose the opportunity to roll over after-tax dollars from 401ks as well to Roth IRAs. But until then, that is still something that's allowed. So if you are thinking about retiring and you have large after-tax dollars in your 401k and you decide to roll over, at this point, you still can roll the after-tax dollars in your 401k into a rollover Roth IRA, basically. You want to make sure they're separated out. Be very, very careful. So again, these are the kinds of tips that we talk about on the show to help inform you. You do not want to roll over after-tax dollars into your IRA because it causes grief for the rest of your life on a tax return. We have to track the after-tax dollars that are in IRAs when you take a distribution to allocate what part of that distribution is taxable and not taxable. If you had the opportunity, you know, for some people, so I'm talking about people who probably retired before this option of rolling the after-tax into the Roth. Now people who have the after-tax can roll it to the Roth, tax-free, awesome, greatness, that might be going away. All right? So always new information. So that was just some of the tips that Jackie and Rod talked about on that show, which again was on March 16th. And that is again available on WDIY.org and yourfinancialchoices.com. Now, charitable giving. We talked about charitable giving on March 30th. If you're charitably inclined, I can't stress this enough. If you are charitably inclined, and you have an IRA, and you're over age 70 and a half, this is really, really important for you. I don't know if everyone takes advantage of it. And it's the Qualified Charitable Distribution, the QCD, especially for higher income taxpayers. Many of you are no longer itemizing deductions when they raise the standard deduction so high and lowered the state and local and real estate tax deduction to $10,000 and capped it. So many people are not itemizing anymore. Generally, when you're older, you also no longer have a mortgage or the mortgage interest is so low. So quite often, people are no longer itemizing. It doesn't mean that you're not still charitably inclined. It's just that those charitable contributions don't add up to enough to get you over the standard deduction, which, you know, for people who are over 65 could be, you know, $26,000 plus, something like that. So again, for people who are over age 70 and a half with retirement accounts who are charitably inclined, you really need to check out the concept of the qualified charitable distribution, whereby you use your IRA to make qualified charitable distributions instead of taking it out paying income tax on it, taking that money, putting it in the bank, net of the tax, and then writing a check to your favorite church or your favorite radio station or your favorite charity. Instead of that, you do the check. You have your custodian write the check directly to that 501c3. Then you don't have to report that income as taxable. That's a qualified charitable distribution. So for people who are charitably inclined anyway, it's a great, great tool. And we talked about that on that show on March 30th, as well as other topics. Folks, we're at our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Sieber. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on 88.1, also available at WDIY.org and on the WDIY app. We are talking about some takeaways from prior shows. We just briefly talked about charitable giving, and that was from the March 30th show, where I also talked about using donor-advised funds. That helps you bunch years' worth of deductions into 1 year to help you get over that standard deduction, and also using highly appreciated securities in your charitable giving that even if you don't itemize, you are still benefiting from not having to sell the security and report the gain and pay tax on it. In this case, you donate the highly appreciated securities that have a holding period of more than a year to your favorite charity, get the deduction or get the value of the fair market value without having to report the gain. If you then in turn also do that in a big way to a donor advised fund, for example, then you get the deduction, if you get over the standard deduction, for the fair market value. And you can do grants out of the donor advised fund on an ongoing basis in whatever method or time period you would like to do. So lots of ideas on charitable giving on that show. Estate planning implementation, we talked about that on May 4th. And I have spoken about involving your children or your trusted advisor in your estate planning and talking about finances and things like that. Typically, those trusted advisors and children, this will be those that you're choosing to serve in those important fiduciary roles. Fiduciary roles that I'm talking about when we say fiduciary means acting in your best interest. Quite often we talk about certified financial planner professionals being fiduciaries. We talk about registered investment advisory firms with their associated representatives being fiduciaries, acting in the best interest of the client in their investment management. But those fiduciary roles also play for executors to carry out your wishes from your will, and powers of attorney when you're alive and not capable of handling your own financial affairs, and a trustee if you have a trust, whether it's during your lifetime or, as we talked about with Jim Ruggiero last week, or a trust after you're gone. Those roles are fiduciary roles, and you want to make sure that you're picking a trusted trustee, a corporate trustee, or friends or family, someone that you do feel can fulfill those wishes for you. So when I talk about estate planning implementation, and I talked earlier about talking about some of this with your children, it also doesn't always mean you have to talk about the specific dollar amounts, but I really, really do emphasize that they should understand what your wishes are and of who is doing what, and where your important documents are. It's really a disservice to those we leave behind if we haven't kind of given them a little heads up. It's already stressful enough to lose your loved ones, and it can be a tough role for these people who are willing to take on those responsibilities. So in any way that you can help them makes such a huge difference, with your digital assets or passwords and user IDs for your bank accounts or your financial assets or your liabilities, whatever it might be, it makes such a difference. And you want to make sure that your estate planning documents include permissions for all of that. Attorneys have new language that they use in more recent years to help with that, because there's a lot of fine print in terms and conditions on all these websites that we log on to and set up accounts with that, you know, you want to make sure that your executor or trustee or power of attorney is going to be able to access that information, particularly if you provide the user IDs and passwords. Now, also what we talked about when we said estate planning implementation, it is just that. Are you implementing? So it's one thing to talk about having a plan for days on end, months on end, years on end. Yes, I should do that. Yes, I should do that. And, you know, I've had clients that I pester them and they do eventually do it, and it's great. But sometimes we do need those little reminders or prodding, but you really do need to implement what the plan might be, because if you don't have a plan, someone does have a plan for you, and it's the state. It's your state of residence. They will decide how things go. And you really don't want that when it's not as difficult as you think. Having something is better than nothing. So implement a plan, something you've thought through, and then see it through. So the key is making sure that all the moving parts are working together. Typically, the implementation of the plan means that you have already assessed your goals. And when I talk about goals, I covered on that show again back on May 4th. How do you kind of, I have like an agenda I use to kind of lead people, hopefully, to some clarity in what they want. We talk about the goals. Is it asset preservation? Is it tax savings? Is it, spend it all while you're alive? Then we talk about, you know, the heirs. Are they responsible? Are they capable? Are they able? Are there special needs? Are there unforeseen circumstances that we may have to, navigate? We talk about the inventory of the assets and the liabilities. So you kind of want to go through all of that. And after doing that, hopefully, you'll work with your attorney in executing or preparing those documents that help you or your fiduciaries fulfill those goals that you had, either through the will or asset titling or beneficiary designation, to make sure that it does all work together. You know, I've seen where people think everything is going through their will, and their will might say one thing and their beneficiary designations on the retirement account say something completely different. That's what we talk about when we talk about coordinating your estate planning and the implementation of that, because the beneficiary designations are non-probate. It means it doesn't go through your will. And then I've had folks say to me, well, let's just make it all go through the will. It's easier. I don't have to think about it then. Let's just make the beneficiary the estate on everything. Well, the estate being a beneficiary of an IRA is very different than an individual being a beneficiary of an IRA or a charity being the beneficiary of an IRA. So you really just want to think it all through and make sure you understand how it ends up flowing on paper. So that is what we talked about. Basically, and Dennis Pappas and I talked about this on the show called Legal and financial planning for Alzheimer's disease. It really was just even for elder care. And Dennis Pappas is with Vasiliadis and Pappas, and that was on May 11th, but this is applicable too. He talked about the four important documents, your will, power of attorney, health care, and living will, but it could also include a trust as well. So again, for the estate planning implementation, understand how the assets are to be titled and how to name the beneficiaries and how that all coordinates with your will or not. You can get it to the right place either through beneficiary designation, asset titling, or the will. You just want to make sure they all work together. With Dennis, we discussed the difference between personal care and skilled nursing and the estate documents to have, which I just mentioned, but also to understand the options for elder care, which include long-term care insurance, self-coverage, or Medicaid. And, you know, you may not get them all. So some people think that your health insurance is going to cover skilled nursing, and it doesn't. So you really have to make sure you know what's going to apply for your situation. And talking with an attorney who's familiar with elder care planning really can help. We talked with Dan Banks about Medicare planning on May 25th. Dan Banks is with Silvercrest Insurance, and he'll be, you know, hosting a show for me at the end of August. And we talked about Medicare supplement plans. And I think the big takeaway from that show was that supplement plans can be changed any time of the year. Some people think that you can't change the Medicare supplemental plans, but Dan assures us that they can be changed any time of the year. What's really important, I think, when we talk about the open enrollment period, that is, I think, for when people want to maybe get on Medicare. We're going to have him talk about that again. I've had Dan on a number of times. He's very knowledgeable, but I keep that in his department, not in my department. It's not my specialty. We also talked about Medicare Part B premiums and how the cost of Medicare Part B premiums can be affected by your income on your tax returns and ways to either mitigate that or get it reassessed. That is using the SS-44 form for a life event, and that relates to what we call the income-related monthly adjustment amount changes for the Medicare Part B premiums based on your income. We talked about savings bonds on June 1st, and savings bonds being EE bonds and how to value those using treasurydirect.gov, certain ways to save on the taxes on the redemption of those savings bonds if you meet the qualifications by using them for education. And that, you know, we highlighted that information. We also talked about I-bonds, which are tied to inflation, and the current rate is 9.62 as an annualized rate, but that does get reset every 6 months. And there's particular rules and limitations to those I-bonds, and there is more information on those as well at treasurydirect.gov. Last week, we talked about Trust 101 with attorney Jim Ruggiero, and he brought up some great points about having a trust and explained some of the terms important to know and understand. And we also talked about using trust for IRA distributions, meaning making a trust the beneficiary of an IRA. What would that be about? And you have to be careful, but there might be advantages there. And, you know, he had mentioned that in some ways he thinks a living trust could be superior to a will. And, you know, I had said sometimes it seems that trusts go in and out of favor. And he's saying, no, not really. It's not that trusts go in and out of favor. It's the understanding, basically, of them, you know, from novices, I guess, as to whether they go in and out of favor. There's a lot of reasons and a lot of benefits of using a trust that Jim discussed on that show. So, folks, I hope this helped give you kind of an overview of some of the topic takeaways that we, you know, explore each week on your financial choices. We've been doing it for almost 13 years here at WDIY. If you have show topic ideas, we always welcome those. I love learning, so it's a great opportunity for me to learn each week, and it's it goes on forever. So topic ideas can be shared through yourfinancialchoices.com, and questions can also be posed there. And I'm pretty good about answering those questions through that website. And if for any reason I ever don't, please let me know. But I'm usually pretty good about that, and I'm not trying to get your information or anything. I really, truly enjoy helping and educating. I have Eric here. Eric, thanks for hanging in tonight with us. No call or questions. I apologize, but hopefully maybe next week. James, thank you for being here as well. Next week, we're talking about gifting and inheriting, some tips to know. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.